This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Elvis Presley by Elvis Presley.
All right.
Okay, so this is a description of the album. It says Elvis Presley's self-titled debut album, released on March 23, 1956, is a landmark in rock and roll history. As the first rock album to top the Billboard charts, it helped launch Presley into superstardom and solidified his status as a cultural icon. The album blends rockabilly, rhythm and blues, country and pop, showcasing Presley's dynamic vocal range and magnetic stage presence. With hits like Blue Suede Shoes and Tutti Frutti, alongside heartfelt ballads such as I Love You Because, the record captures of the raw energy and rebellious spirit of early rock and roll. Backed by Scotty Moore's innovative guitar work and Bill Black's driving bass, Presley's performance exudes charisma and youthful excitement. The cover, featuring Elvis mid-performance with his name in bold pink and green letters, has become one of the most iconic images in music history. More than just an album, Elvis Presley marked the beginning of a revolution, influencing countless artists and shaping the future of rock music.
All right.
Okay, so yeah, so this was released on March 23rd, 1956. Genres are rock and roll and rockabilly. Label is RCA Victor and produced by Sam Phillips from Sun Recordings and Stephen H. Scholes from RCA Recordings. And so, yeah, so the album is, there's 12 tracks on the album and it's split evenly, six and six. So the first song is Blue Suede Shoes and side one ends with Just Because. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, if you want to stop at Just Because, we'll pause at the halfway point to have a discussion there. And we've linked the album in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. Okay, so here we go. Here's the first song on the album, Blue Suede Shoes. Okay, ending side one with Just Because. Yeah, this is, I really like the rawness of this.
Yeah. Early Elvis is best Elvis.
Absolutely. Like, this is still pretty early in rock and roll, and this is, I think this is really considered one of the first rock albums in terms of an album as a structure and not just a collection of singles. And so, you know, this is, cause there is actually a sort of a, like he's got two rockers and then a slow ballad and then two rockers and another slow ballad. And so there's a structure to, they thought out, okay, how we're going to sequence this album. And I don't think, there had been albums before, but I don't think rock and roll had had an album where they had actually thought about what the listener was going to experience. I think this might be one of the first cases of that.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm not sure how conscious they were of it, because I know the first, well, there's one rocker, then a slower one, then there were two rockers, and then a slower one, and then another rocker. So it could be intentional.
Like, his voice on this is great. Like, this is obviously when he's, you know, very young. So his voice has that youthful sort of sort of quality to it. But, you know, I mean, it feels very, I don't know what the word is. It feels very light. It feels full of energy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think on the last Elvis one we were talking about, I had mentioned that, you know, Elvis has this an energy about him that, you know, the later album, I wasn't so sure if it had captured that energy. There was a little bit of it in there at the time. That one came out in 1960, I think.
Yeah, 60 or 61, around there, yeah.
So he had come back from his stint in the Navy.
Or the Army.
He was the Army. Stint in the Army. And this is before all that. This is when he's still, you know, fresh. And well, this is the first album. Not the first single, though.
Yeah, his first single was That's All Right, Mama.
Right. And that came out,
that was
late 55?
July 19th, 1954. So this is about a year and a half after that.
Yeah, okay. 54, oh wow. All right. And it's a rocker too. And yet it was before really people coined it rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. And well, to be fair, I mean, that was really before, like, the single was the thing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it wasn't the intention to go in. No, the way we think of an album now, today, that hadn't really formed at this point.
No.
You know, so he wasn't thinking of, oh, I got to record an album because I've got this collection.
No, you record a single. Maybe record a couple songs so they can record or release the, you know, single to the buying public, put them in jukeboxes, whatever. Send them to radio stations and yeah.
You know, it is pretty amazing to think this just occurred to me how much of a phenomenon Elvis was. And a lot of it was because of his manager, Tom Parker, who was just ruthless in marketing. But, you know, it is pretty phenomenal to think about in the 50s when, like, now we have so many different types of media. There's internet, there's whatever, there's so many different ways that you can advertise. But back then it was the still early days of television,
and they weren't advertising music on television.
Not really, no.
They would sometimes get like a spot to play on a TV show, and that was basically all the promotion on TV you would get, which was no small thing. I mean, just talk about the Beatles.
Well, I mean that's an interesting point too, because that was what, about 8 years after this,
yeah,
and that's how quickly television took off. Whereas, like, in this era, yeah, he made I know he did the Ed Sullivan show, because the famous thing of back then, the Ed Sullivan show was he could only be shown from the waist up.
Right.
Because they thought, you know, his dancing was too sexual, and they thought it would be inappropriate for kids to see that. But, you know, the funny thing about that is, I wish I knew the name of the show and the network it was on. I think Ed Sullivan was on CBS, and I think a week before or later, like, it was big news that he was only going to be shown from the waist up. And I think, I could be wrong about this, but I think the rival network
decided to forego that.
And it was obviously just about grabbing ratings.
Of course.
It's like, we are going to show his full body, you know, dancing and whatever. It's like
writhing away, wiggling about like a, yeah.
gotta keep keep it from the children's eyes, which, you know, and today it's so, so tame, but, you know, it's,
Yeah, there's, you know, you can go too far the other way for sure. Yeah, they were definitely very, what's the word? Well, very sensitive about things like that at the time.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, but like the album itself, I, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this and the cover of the album. So thinking about how raw this is, and I think it's fitting that like during the late 70s punk movement was sort of wanting to get back to this. And I think it's fitting that The Clash on their album London Calling paid tribute to the cover of this album by using the same same font for the album title. So I think like this is sort of the album that represents that rock and roll in its pure form of what it meant to a lot of kids in the 50s, and sort of not just Elvis, but all, like Chuck Berry and Little Richard and all the early rock and roll artists. It was where rock and roll started, and just thinking about listening to the song so far, I'm more familiar with the music that this influenced than listening to this. So I'm used to hearing the more fleshed out ideas of where this came from. So I'm expecting like the ending of I Got a Woman, I was expecting an extra note to finish off the song. Because I've heard, I think Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers did the version that was on this album. They didn't do the Ray Charles version. They did this version. And I think to end it, they played that extra note. I was expecting that. So it's sort of interesting to hear the sort of the germs of ideas that other bands how can we sort of polish? This is sort of the unpolished version of what I listening to like Beatles versions of early rock and roll songs and sort of expecting the more polished version of, oh, but no, this is where sort of it started, you know.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It is sort of interesting to hear it, and it was just recorded live off the floor at Sun Studios. It was there wasn't a lot of fussing about with, you know, it's not Dark Side of the Moon. It's not that. It's not labored over the same way. Basically, they wanted to get a good take, and that's what they would concentrate on. There was no real, I don't think there was any, you know, overdubbing and stuff like that, really.
No, it doesn't sound like it anyway.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it is very raw, and it's funny that I think the song "I Love You" because of the primitive recording equipment that they had at the time, it made it sound like it was recorded like on a front porch, like just someone strumming a guitar on a front porch. I don't think that was the intention, but that's just the way it sounded, like it was recorded outside. It doesn't sound like it was recorded in the studio.
Hmm. Yeah, it had a very, there was a lot of presence to it. Like you're really up close to it. It's a very intimate sort of a recording. Yeah, I think I know what you mean by that. Whereas I didn't really hear the outside thing. I definitely could definitely picture that in the studio. But again, there wasn't a lot of extra going on. There's no reverb on anything or anything like that. It was just, yeah. And the idea was just to capture the song. But it was a very intimate performance. And the recording style picks up on that.
And speaking of reverb, I love that 50s slapback echo. I love that sound, and on the guitar and on the vocals. It sounds really cool. That very fast delay.
Yeah.
I did manage to find a few pretty interesting facts about the album. It was the very first rock and roll album to top the charts. Elvis Presley became the first rock and roll album to reach the number one Billboard pop album chart, where it stayed for 10 weeks, marking a major turning point for the genre, which is pretty interesting. I mean, you know, to have, obviously there had to be one, there had to be a first, but it's interesting that this would be the first, and I'm not surprised that it's the first rock album to top the charts. And it was recorded just in just a few sessions. The album was recorded in a matter of days across different sessions at RCA Studios in New York and Nashville, and even included tracks from an earlier session at Sun Studios in Memphis. It was a genre-blending breakthrough. The album features a mix of rockabilly, country, R&B, pop, and pop, demonstrating Elvis's versatility. His cover of Carl Perkins' Blue Suede Shoes became one of the definitive versions of the song. And that is interesting. Yeah, I hesitate to say that his version of Blue Suede Shoes is more well known, because Carl Perkins' version is pretty well known. But
it's fairly well known, but I think that was a product of after this version came out. It was one of those songs that I think was waiting for someone to do. Because I know Carl Perkins would, you know, he records stuff like that, but he wasn't as big of a household name.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, I mean, Elvis kind of made him sort of famous just by recording a song, I suppose.
Yeah.
The iconic album cover inspired punk rock. The album cover featured black and white action shot of Elvis with his name in pink and green letters, was later recreated by The Clash for their 1979 album London Calling. Already talked about that, but the album is not just singles, it's a full experience, unlike many albums of the time, which were often compilations of previously released singles. Elvis Presley was one of the first major rock albums to feel like a cohesive listening experience, shaping the way albums were structured in the rock era. There were singles from the album, but there weren't any singles that were, there weren't any songs that were previously singles put like tacked onto the album. This was like a fresh sort of fresh release, basically.
Yeah, and it probably was one of the very, if not the first example, one of the first, very first examples of a single being released off of a record.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was not common at the time. It was more common to release an album and release a single with along with the album, but not include the single on the album. Yeah, because I don't know why. I guess it was just one of those things that they
wanted people to buy both.
Well, that's it.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Six Picks Music Club. So check that out.
Hey there, I'm Dave, and I host Six Picks Music Club with my two buddies, Jeff Rowe and Russ. We talk about six songs on a playlist that meet a theme to a topic that we've already decided on.
Just real quick, do you meet themes? Do you meet them?
Okay, no, I don't know. I guess that, what's the...
Russ, could I get a ruling on the verbal phrase, meet the theme?
Jeff, I don't know. I'm not fluent in the spoken word.
People just don't say meet the theme. They say fit a theme. And every week we talk about six songs that fit a theme.
All right. Okay, fit a theme.
Guys, we're going to have to re-record this.
Ah,
Okay, and Dave, don't forget, it's Six Picks Music Club, not your dark web pod, Sex Picks Booty Grub.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right. And ending the album with Money Honey. Yeah, this is a... I really enjoyed this album. I when I was a very little kid, like maybe like 3 or 4 years old, I loved Elvis. And this, listening to this, has sort of brought me back to that sort of point. I thought this was a lot of fun to listen to. And I, you know, it's cool in a historic sense as well. You know, just listening to early rock and roll. I do enjoy listening to 50s rock and roll just to hear, like, okay, this is where it came from. This was a cool experience. Yeah,
it's a pretty good record. For its time. It's it's just it's a good collection of songs. There's not really a dull spot. And plenty of rockers, and I always thought that's where Elvis Presley shone the brightest, is when he was doing those rockers, especially in his early days.
The 50s Elvis is, that's, like you said, that's his best period. Later in the 60s, like when he was doing the movies, he actually hated doing all those movies. It was his manager who kind of forced him to do them.
Contractual obligation movies.
Yeah, exactly.
For the most part. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. He just wanted to go out and tour and play music. His manager, Colonel Tom Parker, he really had a hold on Elvis. It's actually quite tragic, and I think that's what led to his addiction to drugs and food and sort of numbing himself, because he was depressed that, you know, he couldn't express himself as an artist. And I think he was frustrated by that.
Yeah. It's a pretty old tale.
But, you know, this Elvis, there's still that optimism in his voice. You know, the optimism of, you know, I'm getting to do the thing that I love. I'm getting to play this music that I love. I'm getting to record it, and they're going to release it. There's that you can tell that excitement in his voice. That sort of, even if it's a naive excitement, there's still that excitement there.
Before the cage comes down with the Japanese fighting spiders inside.
Exactly. Exactly. it is sad, but it's true. I mean, if you've ever, I would recommend that Elvis Presley movie to sort of see, like, sort of what happened. I mean, this guy Colonel Tom Parker had such control over his career and his public, you know, this is something that I thought was really interesting, is he actually printed, he had buttons made that said "I hate Elvis" to cash in a lot of people love Elvis, but a lot of people hate him too. I could probably make money off the people that hate him too.
Yeah, I know. I'm well aware that was a thing. Yeah, I don't know how well known that is, but that is a thing that he did. So yeah,
and the players on this, like his backing band, is really good. I mean, Scotty Moore, who we discussed on the previous Elvis Presley album that we did, his guitar playing, it's pretty rudimentary for today's standards, but it gets the job done. You know, it's.
Well, it's nice and tasteful. It doesn't It doesn't have to be too flamboyant or anything, but it was, you know, it's tasteful but groovy at the same time.
Exactly.
It has a thing going for it. So, yeah. And of course he influenced almost all of my favorite guitar players.
Yeah. this is his Elvis's first band, the one that is playing on this and the one that he toured with. They were a really, you know, they were a tight unit. So this might be an interesting test. What would be your three highlights on the album?
I was trying to think. I'm going to go with Blue Suede Shoes just because that's just...
That's a classic.
It's classic. It's the classic. It's probably the best song on the album, and they started it off with it. That might be the only drawback to the album is that they got the biggest, best thing out of the way, but nothing else is really bad. So, let's see here. I thought Money Honey is pretty fun. And I Got a Woman, I guess. Those are pretty good. Oh, I also want to mention that I'll Never Let You Go, Little Darling, the way it sort of transitioned from a ballad into something that suddenly had a little bit more upbeatness to it was kind of cool.
It's funny because I was going to say the exact same things. those were my picks for, and I was going to mention the thing about I'll Never Let You Go, Little Darling. Exactly. You literally took all the words out of my mouth. Like,
oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's good that I completely agree. I mean, it's those will be my picks as well. So would you listen to this album again?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth putting on. It's a good album. Or if you like, you know, early rock and roll and stuff like that, this is probably, you know, the beginning of some of the best.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is, it's a great album, and I think it's a fun album to listen to. But I also think if you're like interested in music history, it's also an important album to listen to because this is sort of like the foundations of a lot of stuff that would come after.
Yeah.
I would absolutely listen to it again. But I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Don't forget to subscribe and follow the show. And we'd love it if you give us a rating and review because it helps new listeners find us. And if you want to support the show and get some exclusive content, like getting these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out at the end of each episode, and you could even pick an album first review, so that's kind of cool. You can go to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can do all that there, and you can also check out the website. Go to polyphonicpress.com. You can get all the previous episodes that we've done so far, and different updates and things like that, and I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd,
and I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.